Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we get started today, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search, LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, so please keep them in mind for all of your recruiting needs. Today we have with us on the show Katrina McGee. She is a best-selling author, career strategist, and former executive vice president and chief marketing officer of Susan G. Komen for a Cure. She has taught thousands of corporate Americans how to be happier and more successful in their careers. Long ago, she realized that everyone deserves to have it all. According to the 2018 Women in the Workplace study, 62% of management positions are held by men, while only 38% are held by women. McGee asked herself why this was still the case, and her answers led her to write this book. Women are smart, ambitious, and want to make a positive difference in the world. Yet it seems like no matter how hard we work between our personal and professional lives, we still feel like we're always falling short in some area. So Katrina has come up with some secrets to do what you love for a living while still enjoying a vibrant life. So thank you so much for joining us today, Katrina.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell me, how did you come across and go down this path? It sounds like you were a female executive at a major company yourself. Was that always what you wanted to do when you were a young girl? Is that what your dream was to one day be a female executive or author?
I don't think that was necessarily my dream. I wanted to have an adventurous life. I wanted to travel, and I've always been kind of a do-good girl, and I knew that I loved speaking and being around people. And that kind of led me on a circuitous career path. I started out in accounting, did not like that, went back and got my MBA, went into sports marketing. And then it wasn't until I really started with cause marketing, being able to marry all of my skills in marketing and business development and career and speaking with causes that I love. Women's wellness, women's empowerment, heart disease and stroke, that I found my place, you know, that space where I could achieve greatness. And so in many ways, I became what I thought. I traveled for a living. I was able to help people. But it's so much more. It became so much more than what I would have imagined.
And so tell me, how was it for you to write your first book? I know a lot of people want to write a book, but to actually write a book, especially Be Bold, Be Brilliant, Be You. What a great title. I love it.
Oh, thank you. That's actually my second book. My first book was Loving on Me, and it took me almost 5 years to write that one. Jennifer, I was terrified of being immortalized as an idiot in the written word. I was like, what am I doing? Whose idea was it to write a book? And I went to the Iowa Writers Festival. I learned a very important lesson. You know, we can have natural gifts in our life, but our gifts still need to be cultivated. And so I went to the Iowa Writers Festival to learn how to write a book versus a blog or a post. And they really helped me outline it and bring it over the finish line. And then the second book was inspired by my experience on a women's leadership tour, the challenges and barriers in our career. I kept hearing them over and over. And I said, you know, I really want to provide a tool that answers some of the practical questions about how you can immediately amplify your impact.
Well, I love it. I think it's so important. I know here in California, at least, they've recently enacted a law where at least I think one in however many board members, 12, I believe it is, board members must be female on a corporate board. So I think that we're definitely taking steps in the right direction. And I think that, you know, some of us, whether you're a man or a woman, we get stuck and we kind of feel like other people are driving our careers. So what advice would you give out there to anybody who might be tuning in and saying, gosh, okay, you know, here we are, and Katrina is going to be telling us about how to be bold and brilliant and be you. But how do you even get in the driver's seat of your career to begin with?
Well, I think that's an important question because most of us have just gone through and let our career happen to us, waiting for someone else to promote us or to notice our great work, being frustrated when we get overlooked or passed over for promotion. In the book, I really talk about how to identify and inhabit your space for greatness, to understand what your strengths are, your skill set that you've developed, and the honest desires for your life. You know, most of us don't go for what we want. We go for what we think we can get. And so I'm trying to break this habit we have of taking our own selves out of the consideration set to say, you know what, you deserve to have it all. The first thing you have to figure out is what value you're bringing to the table and what you really want.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. It's funny that you're talking about this because just today, one of my mentors sent me this great email about 1960, I guess it was, a renowned plastic surgeon named Dr. Maxwell Maltz published a groundbreaking work on cognitive bias called Psycho-Cybernetics, A New Way to Get More Living Out of Life. And in the book, he described, here you have this guy who's a plastic surgeon, patients who were literally given a brand new face through his work, and yet afterwards still reported the old feelings of inadequacy that plagued them throughout surgery. So through his, you know, extensive and evidence-based research, what he realized is that like the new face was too much of an emotional leap for people and that people sometimes need an emotional facelift. So I think that's why so many of us in the job world is if we can't get to that leap of believing that we're going to be a CEO, an executive, somebody who is financially free, whatever it is, first, you have to believe it, and then you can achieve it. But if you don't think that you deserve it, then you have to do an emotional face or mind lift in order to be able to pivot and be able to realize that it is something that you're worthy of.
Yeah, I talk about that a lot when I speak because it's so funny you said that. I posted on Instagram today, believe, work, achieve. And that's because, you know, we do what we do because we believe what we believe. And most of us have 50,000 thoughts running through our head every day, and the majority of them are negative. We look at ourselves through the lens of lack. You know, we're always thinking about what we don't have or what we don't know or what we can't do. And so it's, I really try to put people in a space of can do. That's why each of the chapters has an exercise at the end, so that I'm not trying to tell you the whole plan right away. I'm just trying to get you to your next step, to shift your thinking, what you say to yourself, and a practical action you can take right now. Because when we do that, we experience internal transformation before we try to embrace an external manifestation.
I love that. So tell me, what would be an example? I know we don't want to give away the whole book, but I would love to know one thing that maybe our listeners could utilize in the day-to-day life to kind of maybe mitigate those negative thoughts. Like you said, right now they're bombarding us at probably as you and I are speaking and our listeners are listening, people are having negative thoughts, positive thoughts, judgmental thoughts, because it's how we're designed. So how can you even begin to get a hold of that and grasp that to redirect your thoughts into a more positive, constructive way?
So chapter two talks about activating your unstoppable superpower, which is authenticity. Authenticity is your unstoppable superpower because there's no one that can beat you at being you. And one of the things I do, you know, is to teach people to talk to themselves. Because listen, we all have the negative thoughts. We all have a thing. And the key to life is that thing not having you. And so I ask, what are the negative thoughts that you have about your career? What are the negative thoughts that you have about yourself? Some people say, I'm too old, I'm too young, I'm inexperienced, I'm overqualified, I don't have the right look, I don't have the right speech. Whatever it is, we all have something that we are overly critical of ourselves about. And I say, write down that limiting thought, and now I want you to write the counter to it. Like if your best friend was saying that about themselves, what would you say about them? Because see, we can always see the good in other people, but for ourselves, the negative tends to bombard us and overwhelm us. But when we learn to write affirmations and speak them to ourselves, not as a magic wand, I mean, you don't say them and suddenly you become somebody else. They really are for two purposes, confirmation and liberation. confirmation that what is the actual truth about your life, the positive thing, you say that to yourself to combat the negative thought, and liberation because you disrupt the negative narrative running in your head over and over and over. And what we see is over time, even if you don't believe those affirmations at first, if you just want to believe them, they start to have a positive impact on your life.
Yeah, I do that quite a bit myself. I'm not sure. Are you familiar with EFT or tapping? Have you ever used that technology?
I haven't.
Oh, it's amazing. You would love it, Katrina. So it's actually doing exactly what you just said and then scientifically tapping on meridians and pre-planned points on your body. You can find great videos on YouTube about it. What you do is, so you would write down the negative thoughts. Say, for example, I'm not good enough. And then you would write down the counter thought. I believe in myself, or I am good enough, or I am worthy. And what you do is you write down, say, 30 things that are disruptive or negative thought patterns, followed by 30 things that are the antithesis or positive affirmations. And not only do you write them down, but then you tap on key points, like say, for example, right above your eyebrows, at your temples, above your lip, below your eyes, and you repeat it over and over. And so you would tap, say, I think there's about 7 or 8 points. And you would tap using both hands and say, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy on all of those points. Go through the 30 negative ones. And then you actually go through the 30 positive ones after that. And I believe science has taught us that you can rewire your brain that way to embed the positive thoughts and remove the negative ones.
You absolutely can rewire your brain. I firmly believe that. I have done that for myself and taught other people how to do it as well. I haven't done the tapping part. I love that because it gives you a practical action that you can do as a reminder, a reinforcement point. But I believe that the only way that we break the negative narrative in our head is by replacing it. And what you're doing is combating its impact and refusing to be stuck in that space. It puts you back in the space of can do so you can take your natural next step.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's so important. And one of the things I love to do, and I don't know if you do this, Katrina, is I have committed listeners, or I suggest to people out there, what this means for anybody who's tuning in is that you have people who are listening for the words that you use and for your highest and best good. So if you accidentally spill some of those negative thoughts that are in your head out into the world, you can have friends who might call you on it and say, hey, Katrina, you know, I know you just said that you're shit and worthless or whatever it might be. And then what you can do is you can counter those thoughts and have friends call you out on it, be like, hey, what if we said it like, you know what, this is an opportunity for me to learn and grow. And when you pivot those thoughts, you start to A, become aware of them, B, you have a committed listener who's helping you even when you're not aware of them, and then C, you can actually utilize that to reprogram your brain, as you just mentioned, into thoughts that you want to have and words that you want to speak.
Absolutely. I talk a little bit about that in the book, in the chapter under Cultivating Meaningful Connections, how you need to have an encourager in your life for just that purpose, because they help stop the negative slide. They will listen to you for a few minutes, but then they will help you course correct, knowing that you're trying to show up as your highest and best, knowing that you're trying to break your negative narrative, wanting to help you reframe more to the positive. It's so important. Who we surround ourselves with matters, Jennifer. I mean, we all need that those meaningful connections that help us be our best.
Let's talk for a moment, because, you know, here we are talking about ways to reprogram our brain. And it's funny, I just came from a talk today on how to deal with an office a-hole or jerk, we could call them. Mm-hmm. I'm a recovering jerk myself. Mm-hmm. So what do you do if you have somebody who you work with who's a jerk, or maybe you've been the jerk and you get a bad review? How do you pivot from that and come out of it, either when you're working with somebody
or you're working with a challenging person? One of the place I always start is remembering the only person that you can control is you. You know, a lot of times we try to build relationships with people in the office and we encounter difficult personalities, and it becomes our mission in life to get that person told, or to try to control them, or to try to change them. And it takes us out of our own power and give them the authority of over our life, because we are reacting to their behavior instead of responding in a way that is in our best interest. So I would always remind people that you are in the driver's seat and the person you are driving is you. Second thing I suggest is to establish healthy boundaries. I mean, there are just certain things that you do not have to tolerate as a part of your atmosphere. And by that, I mean, a lot of times we get sucked into this negative bantering or bickering with people instead of speaking our truth and then letting silence speak for us. You know, one of the worst things I used to do all the time is if I disagreed with somebody and it was somebody who just was being contrary, just to be contrary, I would let myself get sucked into needless arguments. And one of my mentors said, you know, you will never win an argument you shouldn't be having. And with both of you,
I love that.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great?
That's
like, you
amazing.
Will never win an argument you shouldn't be having. And so when you encounter, you know, a jerk at the office, you have to be very intentional in your response and not get sucked into the negative narrative. And there are some principles that I teach in a lot of my courses about how to deal with difficult personalities in terms of bringing them to the place of collaboration with you by showing them how it's in their own best interest or eliminating them from your environment when there is no middle ground that can be achieved. Sometimes I think we try to, work on a thing by ourselves when another person is not at the table. But first, we have to get to a point where we're both trying to reach the common good instead of trying to win.
Yeah, I think that's so important to look for win-win scenarios rather than just trying to pummel your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of times.
Go right ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, and a lot of times when you have acted out at the office, it's because you've reacted and not responded or because, you know, you, it's funny, in my 30s, I really felt the need to be seen as right. I know that sounds crazy, but
I'm in my 30s and I completely agree. I'm struggling with it every day. It's a real problem, truth.
I was young and ambitious and wanted my voice to be heard. And you know, I didn't always show up as my best. I was, you know, often accused of being aggressive instead of assertive. And there are times where I think that as women, we are accused of being aggressive because people are not used to ambitious women, or because as a society, we have been conditioned to see women a certain way. And when we are assertive, we are labeled as aggressive. But then there are some times where we actually are aggressive. And so I, you know, whenever somebody comes to me and has gotten this feedback, I always say first, look at feedback as a gift. It is not always right, but it is a perspective of how other people are seeing you. And that in and of itself is valuable. And then as an adult, you get to assess whether you agree with it and how you can be better. There are times I've gotten feedback and it's been painful, but it's been right. I should not have said that. I should not have said that that way. And other times where I've chosen to say, nope, that was how I meant to express myself. You may not have agreed with it, but that is truly what I felt was best. You know what I mean, Jennifer? We have to get to the point where feedback is a gift we use as a point of discernment.
Yeah, it's true. And so how do you handle that? I know you're talking about perhaps you were in your 30s and there were times you might have come across as aggressive rather than assertive. What if you're sitting in a review and somebody gives you some feedback that could be accurate, but some feedback, like you said, that was to you inaccurate? How would you respond and not react, but how would you respond to that if you are in a review situation and you're not necessarily in alignment with what the person is saying? Do you take it and lay down? Do you constructively look at it for yourself, see where it may be true? How would you approach it?
Well, first I would assess it. So one of the things I had to learn to do is talk slow and low. This is just full transparency so that I would not react and instead respond. When I felt myself escalating, I'm getting angry or I'm frustrated because you're telling me something that I don't perceive to be true, I would start to speak slower so that my words could be very measured and I would not say anything that I would later regret. Or speak in a manner that I could be, you know, that I could be accused of being aggressive to the point where it felt threatening. And that's in all honesty. I learned to speak slow and low. And people in my career, they will imitate me because they know that was the way I would modulate my tone if I felt myself getting upset. If I did not have anything constructive to say at the moment because I really needed to think about it or I wanted to present a logical alternative, I would say, that's an interesting perspective. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I want to think about how I would like to respond to it at a later date and then stop talking. The problem is we get caught up in the ramble, and the virus of rambling immediately diminishes our authority. So when you're in a situation, you don't agree, you feel yourself getting upset, as we all would when we don't agree with what somebody's saying about us and it's negative. That's the time to thank a person for their perspective. Say, I don't agree. I'm going to step back and think about it, and I'll get back to you with my response.
I think that's a great way to handle it. I think that's a great way to respond rather than react, because to go back to your point about always being right, I think as human beings, be it male or female, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 20s, teens, as human beings, we tend to want to defend ourselves when we feel like we're under attack, as opposed to just pausing and giving ourselves some time to digest it. And so I do like what you were saying about kind of saying, oh, okay, you know, let me have some time to reflect on this and I'll get back to you a little bit later. I think that can be a much healthier way to approach it.
Because here's the thing, you know, there are lots of lenses we need to look through. Number one, who is saying this to me? And what is their history with me? Is this somebody that I respect, that respects me? Is this somebody who has previously been in my corner, has given me opportunities? Is this somebody who has gotten input from other people? Why are they saying this to me and why now? All of those things are important. If this is a boss that's been generally supportive of you, and and you feel like they had your best interest at heart, we probably got to step back and think about that. You know, why would they be telling us this something different that's suddenly so painful? Versus if this is a person who nits and picks and criticizes all the time. You know, that's a very different scenario. And is their feeling like this really important to my life? Is this somebody who has, you know, impact on my career journey? Because if it's not, then you have to decide if the juice is worth the squeeze.
If the juice is worth the squeeze, I love it. That's awesome. Great. Well, tell me, aside from that, tell me a little bit more about how the book is structured. What is the format of the book in case people are interested in knowing more about that?
It has four core components. The first section is around self-awareness. I firmly believe self-awareness is the first step to success, to truly understand your area of expertise and how you give value at the office is so important because it helps you sell your expertise in a way that unlocks new opportunities for you, unlocks advancement, and gives you a career path that is rewarding and meaningful. The second part is how you show up as your highest and best. A lot of us get coached on things like executive presence, but people don't know how to describe to you what that is, let alone how to build it. And so I give some really practical advice on how to show up at the office, how to communicate with confidence, how to speak up in a way that sells your value and ideas, and when to be silent. The third section is who to surround yourself with, that mentor, coach, sponsor that are so critical to your career journey. And the last part is how to survive and thrive, how to avoid burnout, and how to make self-care, which is so important, but we always leave it to the side, a normal part of your everyday.
I love that. And so with regards to the book, would you say, is it specifically designed for women? Is it designed for men and women? Tell me a little bit more about that.
I wrote it largely as reference when we first started the show. The reality is we live in a time where women are more educated. We get more college degrees than ever, but we get hired less at the onset. And as we matriculate up through our careers, you see less and less women in the ranks. Part of that is because of what they call the confidence gap, us taking our own selves out of the consideration set. And part of it is systemic. So I deal with practical things in the book that you can do to show up as your highest and best. But I also acknowledge and give some strategies for how to impact at the office so women are put into new opportunities. So we do bring our whole self to the office so that we do surround ourselves with people that have the influence to move us through the ranks, even despite all of the challenges that we face. Now, the funny thing is, men have also bought the book and love it as well. And that's because the strategies are universal. So I think everyone in their career that is ambitious and wants to accelerate, that wants to go to the next level, whatever that is, to unlock new opportunities, to have a powerful pivot, or to get promoted, can find some valuable strategies to lead and succeed.
I love that. And on that note about the differences between men and women, what would you say is stopping women from getting promotions? You know, you referenced that survey that says 62% of management positions are held by men, while 38% are held by women. So tell me a little bit about that. What do you think it is that stops women from getting promoted?
Well, there are two tracks to it, right? There is the personal side, the individual responsibility, where you show up as your highest and best, you understand how to sell your value, and that you move past that lack of confidence so you can put yourself in the consideration set. Here's what happened. Men and women can be in the same company. A position will come up. A woman will look at the qualifications and say, oh, I've got 8 out of 10, so they'll never hire me. A guy will look at it and say, oh, you know, I've done about half of this, I'm gonna go for it. And right then, the gap widens because we've taken ourselves out of the consideration set without even going for it. And so part of what I'm trying to do is to close that confidence gap by equipping women with the tools and resources they need to show up confidently and speak to their own value. The other side of that is, of course, the systemic side, you know, the part that takes us out of the consideration set when we choose to take off time and be mothers and then come back, when we choose to not want to work 60 hours a week, when we just flat out don't get promoted because of the perceptions in the office. And so I do a lot of work inside corporations as well with leaders, helping them break through unconscious bias, helping them be better leaders so that they look at the individual person and put them on a track to their own highest and best, and so that we get equal opportunities for advancement.
I think that's great advice. And something fascinating I noticed in writing a recent leadership paper is that several of the people I interviewed mentioned that in some cases, men in senior management and executive roles think that they've done a good job if they have nothing to do. And for whatever reason, women in executive roles that I've come across have the opposite thing where they say, well, gosh, if I have nothing to do, I'm not doing my job. I should be thinking about the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth things down the pipeline that are coming towards me. So that's just been something interesting as an observation that I noticed while writing the paper, that a couple of executives, you know, females mentioned that about their male counterparts.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You know, I noticed that women, even when they get in leadership positions, they spend a great majority of their time still trying to prove that they belong at the table. And I'm trying to shift that thinking by saying, you're at the table, own your seat, sit in it, lead with authority, because it's a different focus. Do you know what I'm saying? When you are leading, you are inspiring, equipping, and igniting others to work toward a common goal or vision. That is your total focus. You're not still trying to prove that you can do that. You do it with authority. Your focus is on your team and empowering that team, not so much focus on what are they going to do, you know, to kick me from the table? How do I still prove that I belong in this seat? Your work speaks for you when you own your seat and lead with authority. And it's a subtle shift, but it is rooted in confidence. And, you know, the gap in how we perceive ourselves. Men, when they're at the table, they belong there. They sit, they lead. We are like, I just got here. I need to make sure I stay in this seat. I want to prove to them I belong. But if you were not qualified, they would have never promoted you. So go with it, assuming you are qualified, you will deliver excellence, and then do that.
Brilliant. Well, I could talk to you for hours, Katrina, about the book and about all these great concepts. I think they're so important for men and women in business. But unfortunately, the show has a limited time. So tell me, are there any takeaways or any points that you'd love our listeners to walk away from today's show with?
Yes, three very important points. Number one, go for what you want, not what you think you can get. Listen, people make a living these days playing video games for a living. They make hundreds of thousands of dollars. So whatever it is you want for your career, it's achievable. Just get on a path to go for what you want. Number two, learn to tell a compelling career story. 9 out of 10 people that I interview cannot identify their three areas of expertise and then give me practical examples of their excellence with measurable results. So Jennifer, if people listening to this show do nothing else, I want them to think about their three areas of expertise, not the 30 competencies that they have at the top of their resume, because they're good, but they're not excellent at 30 things. I mean, I'm talking about the three areas where they rock it, and then have three practical examples of that excellence that they can share to show how they give value. And then the third thing is, make self-care a necessity, not a nice to do. So many of the executives that I meet are on the verge of burnout. And it is possible to be ambitious, have a career that thrives, but still live as a balanced human being.
I love it. Words from the wise Katrina McGee. Well, thank you so much, Katrina. Tell me where, if people want to perhaps use you for their own corporations or pick up one of your books, where would they find more information on you or on your books?
Well, they can find me at katrinamcgee.com. I do speaking and corporate training around the world, so I'm happy to do that. And then my book, Be Bold, Be Brilliant, Be You, is available at amazon.com.
Wonderful, Katrina. Well, thank you so much for all of your wisdom and advice today. I think it's very helpful, and you had some great pearls in there. And thank you, of course, to all of our listeners for tuning in today and making today's show possible. You know, without you, the show wouldn't exist. So big thanks to our listeners. And if you did miss any portion of today's show, you can also find the show on iTunes later in the week under Get Yourself the Job. You can find all of our old shows there as well. And on the LATalkRadio.com page, you can go to the Get Yourself the Job page and look at the bottom of the screen, and you'll find an archive of this show and any prior shows in case you prefer to download them that way. We also invite you, please feel free to interact with us on our Facebook Get Yourself the Job page. That page is devoted to, you know, different articles and tips. Sometimes we share recaps of the show like they, but additionally, I also share a lot of other press releases and articles that sometimes don't make it to the show that are relevant for everybody out there tuning in. So thank you, Katrina, and thanks again to everybody who tuned in today.
Thanks.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.